My guest Dave Hickey is one of those rare art critics whose essays and reviews can be understood and enjoyed by readers who don't have a degree in art history or deconstructionism. His most recent book is entitled Air Guitar, Essays on Art and Democracy, which also offers assessments of Hank Williams, Donald Duck, and Perry Mason. Hickey teaches art criticism at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and he recently wrote an eloquent defense for the Saturday Evening Post illustrator Norman Rockwell as an archetypal American painter. The essay appears in the catalog for an exhibition that's touring the country called Norman Rockwell, Pictures for the American People, which can currently be seen at the High Museum of Art in Atlanta, Georgia. I asked Hickey to remind us of who Rockwell was.
Well, Norman Rockwell was a commercial illustrator who worked beginning for most American magazines, but principally for the Saturday Evening Post, for most of this century, beginning the early part of this century up until the early 70s. Actually, one of the peculiar things about Rockwell is that people do know who he is. I ask my students all the time if they know who he is, and somehow they found out. I'm not exactly sure why or how.
In your essay, you quote John Updike as saying that Rockwell always gave a little more than the occasion strictly demands. How would you characterize Rockwell's most typical art beyond that?
Well, I was spinning Updike, of course. Updike is just being prissy and puritanical. I'm just saying he actually is a very he's a very generous artist and a very devoted artist to making well-designed images. Mm-hmm. And he always does more than's required just to get printed in a commercial in a commercial publication.
In your essay, you discuss a particular painting, which is entitled After the Prom. Could you describe right. what's going on in that picture and why you like it?
Well, I can describe what's going on in the picture, which is that you have a couple of teenagers after the prom sitting at the sitting at a soda fountain. There's a working guy sitting to their left, and behind the counter is a soda jerk who appears to be the brother of the young man in the image. The young lady is lifting her corsage, her gardenia corsage, to be sniffed by the soda jerk behind the counter, and the young man is looking on happily, as is the working guy, who is also obviously a veteran.
The time period is about what, in the 50s, you would say?
I'd say 54, I think.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. And what I like about the picture is almost impossible to explain on radio. It is an extremely elegantly designed picture, just in the traditional European sense. As far as its narrative qualities, it's typical of a great many of Rockwell's pictures in that they don't really teach us what to do. It sort of purports to show us how people should react to what people do. a lot of Rockwell's paintings are simply about the responses of citizens to the behavior of other citizens. And that is the general tenor of a great many of his paintings simply has to do with the nature of the response. And it is, to a certain extent, always a benign and idealized and tolerant response.
Why did you title the essay with an allusion to the Who? The kids are all right.
Well, because I firmly believe this, that Rockwell was one of the few creatures in American popular culture in the 50s who actually privileged kids and their disobedient and willful disagreeableness and a tendency to break rules. And I think that he really sort of, I don't know if we'd have had a lot of the 60s without the sort of benign permission of Rockwell's images. As I say, I always like to imagine these kids in Rockwell's paintings growing up, since I grew up pretty much contemporaneously with them, you know. I imagine those kids at the soda fountain sitting around in some commune in New Mexico trying to recapture that moment. And And there's a wonderful painting of a girl with a black eye sitting outside the principal's office having gotten in a fight and obviously won. And it's not hard to imagine her a few years later burning her bra. Uh-huh.
Yes, and, I saw that picture, and she looks absolutely delighted. She has this big shiner, and she's sitting there with this huge grin on her face, like she's really pleased that she punched somebody out, probably.
Exactly. And that sort of attitude is kind of pervasive in Rockwell. I mean, that sort of tolerance for sort of the disobedience of youth. And I know when I was a kid, I always found it extremely empowering, as we say these days.
In the title essay of Air Guitar, you write something that I think is true, but that few critics are willing to admit, namely that people, and I'm going to quote you here, despise critics because people despise weakness, and criticism is the weakest thing you can do in writing. It's the written equivalent of air guitar, flurries of silent, sympathetic gestures with nothing at their heart but the memory of the music. It neither saves the things we love nor ruins the things we hate. So I guess my question is, why then be a critic?
Well, for the same reason that you do anything in culture, you want your views to prevail. You want to win. That is, you have a view of culture that is with which you are comfortable. You imagine a world in which you would be happy. And you're always, I think, arguing in favor of a world that is more like that. And you want to win. I mean, that is, if I see an artist whose work I believe in, I want everyone to believe in it. This is the occasion to write with as much strength and persuasiveness as you can, always presuming that, the influence of art criticism is roughly that of secondhand smoke. So, you know, it's very difficult to document.
You've done things
besides... And probably just as toxic.
Are you... I had read that you had studied literature and linguistics. Are you also trained in art history or in art in any way?
No, I don't make visual art. Yes, my background is in literature and linguistics.
And so how did you come to want to teach about art as opposed to pursuing those subjects?
Well, it's my view of writers that there's no situation that needs more than two, I was not very comfortable in what you would call academic literary culture, and most literary culture in America is academic in one way or another. All of my friends were artists. I tend to be interested in the incarnate aspects of writing, in the phonotext and what it sounds like, about how it feels, and the sort of physical cadences. I'm interested in the language as a physical thing and not as a disembodied sign system. Mm-hmm. And that aligns there. And as a consequence, there was a point in my life when I figured out that, from my point of view, Edward Richer and Jasper Johns knew more about the language in the way that I wanted to know than Norman Mailer did. In other words, I was just a lot more comfortable in art culture.
My guest is art critic Dave Hickey. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Dave Hickey is my guest. His most recent book is Air Guitar, Essays on Art and Democracy. You were also a rock critic for a time, writing in what I guess we can now start considering almost the golden age of rock criticism, when people like Lester Bangs and Richard Meltzer and people like yourself could write long, very strongly opinionated pieces about music that was, you know, at the time widely considered ephemeral when it wasn't considered actively harmful to the culture, I think. What's your take on rock criticism?
Well, its institutionalization and sort of its infection with the rhetoric of Frankfurt School cultural studies idioms has not really perked it up very much, mm-hmm. in my view. I regarded rock criticism, and really everything I write as I do now, is basically a form of Victorian reportage. In other words, what I'm doing is not any different from what Robert Louis Stevenson did or De Quincey did or Ruskin did. I'm just talking about the stuff that's happening in front of my eyes. I loved rock criticism. That is, the upside of it was that it didn't make any difference. You can actually, as a critic, harm an artist's career. We used to say, you know, if you knock an art show, you can hurt somebody's life. If you knock a rock record, it just makes this funny vinyl noise. And so that was the nice thing about it. I mean, you were absolutely, it was a free discourse. You know, you weren't so much criticizing rock as improvising on the occasion mm-hmm. of a record. And that was an enormous permission. It was a great deal of fun. I can remember, you know, standing out in the street in front of CBGB's with old Lester and Duncan and a bunch of us, watching the people coming out with their ears bleeding. And
we're talking about the Lower East Side Club in New York that was kind of the fount of New York punk rock.
Right, exactly. And actually, only the Dictators, Handsome Dick Manitoba, could actually make people's ears bleed, in my experience.
Uh-huh.
But I think this was Dick being the precursor of Jesse Ventura, I would suppose, the inventor of wrestling rock. But no, that was I'd really love the idea of making it up as you go along. I mean, this all of the things that went on at CBGB's were weird stuff that people made up out in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. you know, in Long Island,
with acts like the Ramones and Talking Heads, yes. and Television and Patti Smith and people like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, exactly. Milk and Cookies and Dead Boys, my favorites. And it's always amazing to see what people will do left to their own devices. And it's always my effort as a critic with regard to the sort of governance of culture to try as much as possible to see that people are left to their own devices. I'm a Darwinian in culture, in terms of cultural production. And the difficulty there is that the artistic discourse is the last refuge of creationism in Western culture. It's totally obsessed with creationism of one sort or another, with the artist and what the artist wants and what the artist does. I'm really interested in the consequences of the works of art themselves.
How did you come to live in Las Vegas? This seems like an odd spot in America to find an art critic, or am I being naive about the art scene in Las Vegas?
Well, a little naive. I mean, this is a visible place. This is a visual place. People will tell you that Las Vegas is the future. It may be, but from my point of view, Las Vegas is the 70s with valet parking. You know, it's a big, permissive, libertarian, gambling, smoking, drinking, stay up late, scungilly at 3 a.m. town. That's the kind of environment in which I'm very comfortable.
Well, Dave Hickey, thank you very much for talking with me.
It is my pleasure.
Dave Hickey's most recent book is Air Guitar, Essays on Art and Democracy. He has an essay about Norman Rockwell in a catalog that accompanies a nationwide tour of Rockwell's art.